KALW.
So $207 million would go towards a whole range of services like building or buying or renovating permanent supportive housing and shelters.
San Francisco bond measures are usually planned out by the city years in advance, but this year Prop A got a last-minute edit related to COVID.
There's enough funds in there to build or acquire 250 supportive housing beds and 75 shelter beds. And there's talk of looking into hotels that went out of business because of the pandemic.
We'll learn more about a bond focusing on mental health, homelessness, and street repair. Then we find out some of the reasons why East Palo Alto has a low voter turnout rate.
When you're focused on surviving, on taking care of your family, voting is not necessarily going to be a priority in your mind.
And another author reading from our New Arrivals series. And more coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Nearly every election, you'll see a bond measure on San Francisco ballots. It's always the first proposition listed. And they're placed on the ballot by the city as a way to fund what the Board of Supervisors or the mayor deem essential city services, like earthquake safety, school repairs, or park maintenance. This year, San Franciscans will vote on Prop A, the Health and Recovery Bond. And here to break it down for us is health reporter Angela Johnston. Hey, Angela.
Hi.
All right, so tell us more about Proposition A.
Well, like you'll see with a lot of measures, Prop A covers a lot of different projects. Three main areas, though: mental health and homelessness, parks and open space, and street and sidewalk improvement. The bond won't raise taxes, and if it passes, the funds will be reviewed by the Citizens General Obligation Bond Oversight Committee, which is a mouthful, but we aired a great piece on that group that profiles them, and it makes what sound kind of boring pretty exciting. So we can post a link to it on the KLW web post.
Right. That was by reporter Raja Shah. So you said this is going to fund three main areas. How much money are we talking about, and where is it going?
The measure would allow the city to borrow up to nearly $500 million, and here's where it breaks down. About 10% of that would go toward sidewalk and streets, ramps and plazas and curbs and pedestrian overpasses.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about parks?
Well, this is the category that would get the most money, $239 million to be exact. The city's capital planning committee has already identified some specific projects that would directly benefit.
Specific projects like what?
There's a park in Japantown, the Peace Plaza. It's over 50 years old, and though it was renovated 20 years ago, the plaza has been leaking water into a public garage below. Mm-hmm. So the project would fix that and add more plants, shade structures, things like that. And then there's also a project to build a new rec center in Hers Playground at the corner of McLaren Park in the southeastern part of the city. And there's another project to renovate Buchanan Street Mall in Western Addition.
And Angela, what about that third category you mentioned, mental health and homelessness?
To me, this is an interesting part of the measure because it was actually added on quite late after the pandemic, partly because of the mental health and housing and homelessness issues COVID-19 exacerbated. Mm-hmm. So $207 million would go towards a whole range of services like building or buying or renovating permanent supportive housing and shelters. There's enough funds in there to build or acquire 250 supportive housing beds and 75 shelter beds. Mm. And there's talk of looking into hotels that went out of business because of the pandemic, or privately owned single room occupancy hotels that are now up for sale.
Okay, those are places. What about services?
Yeah, there's a lot of mental health and behavioral services that are listed as possible things that will get funded with the bond. And an audit a few years back showed that there was a need for shorter wait times and even more mental health beds. And so the bond would go toward building facilities that provide mental health and substance abuse services, or repairing community clinics that offer the same type of services.
Mm-hmm. And San Francisco recently announced an overhaul of mental health services in the city. How does this fit in with that?
Yeah, it's called Mental Health San Francisco, and it was legislation that passed and was voted on late last year in December. And with it comes this proposal for a 24/7 mental health service center where people can go for urgent care and get psychiatric medication. And there's also funds directed at new beds, as well as a new crisis street team and case managers. Mm. And that mental health SF overhaul would cost $76 million just to kind of begin the whole process of changing the system. Mm-hmm. And so I spoke with Supervisor Hillary Ronan, and she was one of the drafters of that legislation. And she said that, yes, some of the Prop A funds would go to things like a sobering center or purchasing these beds that the legislation talks about.
Mm-hmm. And how are projects selected? Like, if it goes to one treatment center or another, or one street or another, how do they pick?
Yeah, well, there's an emphasis on equity written into the bond's language. So the money would be directed toward projects in areas that are underserved. As for how to choose, it depends on the type of project. With streets, the city will take into account something called a pavement score, which is basically how bad the road is. And as I said earlier, there are certain parks that are already identified for funding. Mm-hmm. But as for the other projects that haven't yet been specified, the measure kind of lacks a clear set of criteria for its selection of projects. The head of the Capital Planning Committee told me that different departments can suggest projects, and then those would then be reviewed by the Capital Planning Committee and the Board of Supervisors.
Okay. Who are some of the proposition supporters?
Well, the entire Board of Supervisors voted unanimously on the measure, and it's also endorsed by the mayor. You've got big tech backers like the CEO of a company called Ripple. He gave $250,000, and it's gotten smaller donations from groups like the San Francisco Giants and lots of construction-type unions like bricklayers, because this measure is expected to create a bunch of construction jobs. And because of this wide-ranging support, it's expected to pass.
Does anybody oppose it?
Well, the San Francisco Taxpayers Association usually opposes these bonds, and they have written arguments against this one. They say the city has already dedicated a lot of funding to housing and homelessness and street repair. And the Libertarian Party is also against it, and they say building more housing is a way to solve the problem of homelessness, not bonds. And the proposition needs a two-thirds supermajority to pass.
Okay, and one last question, because a lot of this measure is directed towards homelessness services. How are unhoused folks in the city able to vote this election?
Well, even though a lot of us got mail-in ballots sent to us, polling places will still be open on election day. And a lot of them are already open for early voting right now. And unhoused people without an address can use the address of a service provider, like a shelter or a food kitchen, to register. Mm. So if people didn't register to vote in time, they can still request a provisional ballot at the polls. And I spoke with both Glide and Hospitality House. They're two service providers in the Tenderloin. And they both are acting as polling places this year and have done a lot of outreach to get their clients registered and informed.
Okay, Angela, thank you.
Thanks, Hannah.
Angela Johnston is KALW's health reporter. For more election coverage, including short summaries of many local measures, go to kalw.org/elections. In these final weeks before the election, we're checking in with locations around the Bay Area with low voter turnout rates. Today, we go to East Palo Alto, a city with a 62% Latinx population. They're voting this election for their city council members and on Measure V, an affordable housing tax on hotels. Daniel Marquez is a reporter with El Tecolote covering the election in East Palo Alto. He spoke with city council candidates and community groups to understand what has held back voter participation in this largely Latinx city.
Almost every single person I spoke to brought up that there's simply too much to worry about, right? People are worried about what they're going to eat, right? How they're going to pay rent and how they're going to get by on a day-to-day basis sometimes. The per capita income of EPA residents between 2014 and 2018 was nearly one-fourth of what it was in Menlo Park, for residents in Menlo Park. Unemployment hit 12% in May. Folk are rent burden and at a constant risk of being displaced in EPA. And this is despite the fact that folk are working two jobs in order to pay rent. There are families of 15 living in a house with one bathroom. I heard some of these accounts. Families of five or six living in two-bedroom apartments. So people are worrying about the day-to-day. When you're focused on surviving, on taking care of your family, on being anxious about whether you'll have a job or a place to live in the coming month or the coming year, when you're worrying about these things, voting is not necessarily going to be a priority in your mind.
So you spoke with Miriam Yupanqui. She's executive director for the nonprofit Nuestra Casa. It's a nonprofit serving low-income residents. What did she have to say, you know, about this, about kind of the lower voter turnout?
Yes, absolutely. Nuestra Casa is using their food distribution program in order to inform people about the vote. They're teaching people how to register to vote. They're telling people where they can vote. They're also they're doing text banking. Folk at UCA, and these are youth, right? These are young people. They're canvassing for Measure V. They're mobilizing voters, knocking on people's doors, trying to tell them that voting is important, right? When I was there, there was a group of women who that day went throughout East Palo Alto to knock on doors, to give them flyers on Measure V, to remind people to register to vote. So yes, absolutely, there is this effort.
And does it look like folks are listening? Because like you said, people are worried about their day-to-day. You know, Juan Mendez, one of the two city council candidates that you spoke to, was talking about, look, people are saying my vote doesn't count.
And they think, you know, yeah, my vote doesn't matter. I think a lot of that feeling comes from the 2016 election when Trump won. You know, everyone voted and Trump still magically somehow won. So I think that from that point, what that did to our community is just kind of made them feel like their vote doesn't really matter. Like, why am I going to vote? It doesn't matter, right? Like, it's not going to change anything. But the reality is when you vote locally, that's where the real change happens and it impacts your everyday life. And I think being able to channel that and translate that and help educate people that, hey, the decisions we make and the people we vote this election, especially for city council, are going to determine what benefits or the benefits or how we mobilize as a city.
So what are you hearing in terms of the national election?
Right. You know, it's interesting, Hannah, because I saw a little bit of both. As you mentioned, Juan Mendez's comment, yet people are extremely disillusioned by that, right? One of the interactions I had was that I sat down with Antonio Lopez, who was helping young people register to vote that day. And so I was able to speak to some of the young people who were registering. And yeah, they very much expressed this disillusionment that, you know, does my vote actually count? However, at the same time, going back to this energy that left an impression on me from East Palo Alto, there is still hope. There is still a desire for change. And so, yeah, people are listening.
Are the people you talk to, the organizers, the city council candidates, are they optimistic that this message will go through, voter turnout will increase, engagement will increase, and people will learn to trust that, you know, with a vote, you can change your day-to-day at the end of the day?
Antonio Lopez, who is 26 years old, graduated from Duke University, is currently getting his PhD at Stanford. And Juan Mendez, a 23-year-old who just graduated from UC Berkeley, these people are extremely optimistic. As I was speaking to them, what they really highlighted, what they really prioritized in our conversations was their faith that there could be positive change in East Palo Alto. And for them, that was the reason that they were running. And this optimism, again, I felt it from other people as well. I mentioned Ofelia Bello from UCA. Her commentary was extremely beautiful, extremely optimistic, highlighting the effort and the energy that the community puts to take care of themselves and that they are now putting to try to get people out there to vote. So, and again, it, back to this dichotomy, right? Yes, there's this disillusionment because of the previous 2016 election, national election, I should say. But there is also a lot of hope, a lot of optimism, a lot of faith.
Daniel Marquez is a reporter with El Tecolote. Thanks to Victor Tentz for his help producing that interview. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Next is an episode of our podcast, New Arrivals, a collection of readings by local authors. Here's host Lisa Morehouse.
Dorothy Hurst and Pamela Berkman write the children's series At the Heels of History, featuring dogs and their human companions in key moments of our past. Here, Dorothy reads from Bobo's Cave of Gold, set in the California Gold Rush. It came out in April.
So I'm going to read to you from a scene where Bobo and Shang first meet. And Bobo's name is Sage at the beginning of the book. She's been alone for about a month at this point. And what's just happened is that a bird named Choi Hung has found her and chased her to a stream where she sees Shang, who's using a shovel to try to pry up a rock to look for some gold. And Choi Hung has just told Sage that he brought her there because Shang needs a friend. Sage took a step toward the boy. He held out his hand, like a paw. She took another step, and another. When they were close enough to touch, she sniffed his hand. Then she licked it. He tasted like stream water. "Hello, girl," he said. It had been a long time since anyone had spoken kindly to Sage. She wagged her tail. She looked down at the rock in the stream bed. Shang needed help. She pushed at the rock with her front paws. Shang grinned. He picked up his shovel and slid it under the rock. Together, they worked it loose. Shang turned the rock over. "No gold," he said. His shoulders slumped. He dropped his shovel on the rocks. "But thank you for helping."
That was Dorothy Hurst reading from Bobo's Cave of Gold, part of the series At the Heels of History.
That was New Arrivals, a new KELW podcast produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can hear more and subscribe at kelw.org/newarrivals. And today we're going to leave you with some new music from a local artist. This is Memory Theater from Oakland, and their latest song is called The Farthest Shore. Thank you. Today's Cross Currents team includes Scott Carroll, Sonia Narong, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Lisa Ramreka. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shireen Adil. Managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.